Testament. We move to the sixth case for today, United States versus Gross.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Allison Siegler from the Federal Defender Program, and I represent Kirby Gross. Imposing
Ms. Siegler, if you stand
yes,
in front
Your Honor.
Of the
imposing
you'll be
a 15-year
recorded.
Thank you, Your Honor. Imposing a 15-year minimum sentence on Kirby Gross violates the Eighth Amendment because this punishment is grossly disproportionate to Mr. Gross's crime. Mr. Gross posted images containing child pornography to Yahoo chat groups once in May 2003 and once again in October of 2003.
Could I ask you, Ms. Siegler,
yes, Your Honor.
Whether you can think of any other instance in which effectively a statute passed by Congress that establishes, as this one does, a mandatory minimum sentence has been found unconstitutional as applied in a non-capital case, a mandatory minimum.
Your Honor,
I just want to know how much new ground you want this court to break.
Unfortunately, there is no other such situation. However, in Solem versus Helm, Your Honor, that was a statute, not a federal statute, admittedly, a state statute, which had at one end of the statute the punishment of life imprisonment without parole.
Right, and that's a maximum, and I understand that life without parole may be, obviously nothing is quite the same as a capital sentence, but I'm unfamiliar with courts intervening when a legislative body, whether it be Congress or a state legislature, has decided that a particular offense deserves a minimum of, we'll say, 15 years, as is the case here, that courts have been in the habit of overturning that, on surely not on a facial basis, but perhaps on an as-applied basis even. How would we make those decisions?
Your Honor, it's our position that given, again, as applied, given the very particular circumstances of Mr. Gross's offense, of his past, and of his prior convictions, and of his crime here, all of this, these particular circumstances, lead to the result that a 15-year punishment, whether wherever it is in the range imposed by Congress, is grossly disproportionate to.
But don't you think the logic of your argument really would require striking down mandatory minimum sentences in general and just say Congress just can't include that as part of the sentencing package? There are always going to be people, perhaps like Mr. Gross, who don't seem to fit that. They seem to, you know, the 2 grams of crack person who winds up sometimes with sentences equally harsh or what have you. I'm uncomfortable with the idea that these very finely tuned decisions are constitutionally compelled to be made by judges as opposed to Congress.
Your Honor, it simply comes down to the fact that 15 years, I mean, it's true, Congress definitely can make these decisions. These are decisions that are left up to Congress. But Congress is limited by the Eighth Amendment, and Congress is limited, and judges must interpret the Eighth Amendment to determine whether Congress has overstepped its bounds. And it seems that in this particular case, when we're looking at this particular defendant, 15 years is simply grossly disproportionate to the crime that this particular defendant committed.
I have sort of a variation in my mind, and that is that the federal statute increases the penalty from 5 to 15 years where a defendant has a prior conviction of child sexual abuse. And I take it that you would agree that the 5-year penalty is constitutional. And if so, why can't Congress have properly determined that such conduct presents a much greater danger to the public when engaged in by a person who has in the past engaged in child sexual abuse? And part of the problem is that Mr. Gross is a very sympathetic defendant at this point in time. But still, we have to look at, you know, we have to look at it globally.
Your Honor, it's 5 years is certainly we wouldn't say unconstitutional. It's very hard to determine what would not be a grossly disproportionate sentence, I suppose. If that's the court, is that Your Honor's question? What would not be grossly disproportionate?
Well, or why, for the recidivist, does Congress step across some constitutional line when it goes from 5 to 15? I mean, child pornography is not a victimless crime.
And, Your Honor, I certainly would not argue it's a victimless crime. The important thing, however, is in this instance, this sort of child pornography, this distribution of pictures, is not a violent crime. And it's not a crime that causes a physical risk of harm to anyone.
Well, it's not immediately. But remember, the pictures have to have been created and there has to have been a market. And Congress is very clear that those are concerns when it looks at the retail end, if you will.
Of course, Your Honor. And certainly that conduct, that initial conduct of creating the picture, is certainly very violent and very physically harmful generally to a child. I think it's important to recognize that Mr. Gross's particular conduct here is not of the same seriousness and does not threaten the same harm as sexual abuse of a child or as any attempt to have sexual contact with a child. This is qualitatively different. And this is what the Supreme Court has recognized in Solem versus Helm, when the Supreme Court says a nonviolent crime is qualitatively less serious than a violent crime. And that has to be considered.
Yes and no, though. I mean, there are nonviolent acts that are oftentimes punished because they rest upon or contemplate other violent behavior. The easy example is paying somebody $10,000, which is a nonviolent act, but if the reason you're paying them the money is so they'll go out and murder someone, it is a violent act. It's just that there's a phase of it that's not. And the Congress has come to the decision that child pornography is such a reprehensible practice that you need to punish the consumers of the child pornography with a comparable severity to those who make it. I wouldn't say that it isn't comparable, but you know, maybe you or I might have passed a different law, but Congress has come to that call.
Your Honor, that call by Congress, it is our contention, creates a grossly disproportionate punishment.
Okay.
I think it's also important to consider that there is a national consensus against imposing a 15-year minimum for this particular crime. And this is something that the court considered in Coker versus Georgia in determining whether a punishment was grossly disproportionate to a given crime.
In a capital case, of course, Coker.
That's true, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But certainly the Coker analysis, which is about the national consensus and evolving standards of decency when applied here, there are state statutes. Not a single state punishes this particular crime with anything near a 15-year mandatory minimum. There are seven states, Your Honors, in which there's not even a mandatory minimum, even for someone who's got a prior felony conviction like Mr. Gross, no mandatory minimum for this conduct. And then there are 10 additional states which punish this conduct by a 2 to 5 year mandatory minimum.
But he would have been eligible for a 15-year sentence in a number of those state jurisdictions based on his criminal history.
That's correct, that would have been part of the range that the court could have considered, but given his criminal history, even considering his prior felony conviction and the particular prior felony conviction, Your Honor, in 10 states he would receive between 2 and 5 years. 6 of those states are mentioned in our briefs, and 4 additional states we mentioned in the 28J letter we submitted last week. And the federal sentencing guidelines further support this national consensus, because under the federal sentencing guidelines, this same conduct with this same criminal history, all of the particulars accounted for, receives a sentence, a minimum of 87 months, which is less than half of the 15-year minimum we've got in the statute. I would reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. McGovern.
May it please the court. My name is Patrick McGovern, and I represent the United States.
Before you start your argument, what is the status of the Nevada case for violation of probation?
Your Honor, I believe the Nevada authorities have been notified, and they're aware of the conviction. Beyond that, I'm not aware of the details.
What was the sentence there?
The sentence there was, I believe there were 2 counts of conviction for the Nevada molestation that Mr. Gross committed. And on one count, he was sentenced to 10 years, and the other count, he was sentenced to life. And he ultimately received parole. Obviously, given this conviction, once he does serve his time here in federal prison, he will be subject to that penalty in Nevada. Your Honor, Your Honors, the bottom line here is that throughout every Supreme Court case, the seminal cases on the Eighth Amendment, Solemn, Hermelin, and so forth, every case has noted the substantial deference that is given to Congress or the legislature in assessing penalties. In this case, as Your Honors have noted, we're dealing with someone who has a prior conviction for child molestation. Congress has noted that child pornography is a serious offense. It is not violent in the truest sense of the word violent, but in subsequent cases such as the Ferber case, the court has noted the huge emotional damage that child pornography has on its victims. And Mr. Gross here perpetuated the harm to the child victims.
Was there any evidence that he purchased the child pornography that he forwarded to the Yahoo groups?
Your Honor, there was no evidence of that. He simply was on the Internet, and he distributed this movie file and 15 still images of child pornography.
Do you know if there's any study as to whether the viewing of child pornography by a sexual abuser of child increases the likelihood of recidivism of child sexual abuse?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any scientific study, but I think the case law has recognized that it's child pornography is intertwined with child sexual abuse, and that it creates a market for these people who are interested in child sexual abuse. These perverted people who find pleasure out of viewing child pornography. And that's one of the primary purposes of these strict, harsh laws with these harsh penalties, is to diminish the market of child pornography because, again, at least the several cases have found, and I am not aware of any scientific studies, that child pornography is intertwined with child sexual abuse. And, Your Honor, the final point I'd like to make is that the appellant has talked about the comparisons to state laws and that state laws are more lenient than the federal laws in this area, than the federal penalties. Well, first of all, under the case law, under the Solemn three-part analysis, we don't even reach the state comparison unless there's an inference of disproportionality. And here, given that Mr. Gross was sentenced to 25 years below the maximum, we don't even reach that inference. Furthermore, the cases have also recognized that federal courts and Congress has a distinct interest in eliminating child pornography, given the interstate nexus and, in fact, the international nexus that child pornography has. So I do think that Congress has taken a greater role in trying to eliminate child pornography than the states.
Is there any sense that the states are, in a sense, relying on Congress in this area, that they have lesser penalties because they think it's, as you say, at least a national, if not an international, problem? Or is it just an accident that their structure seems to be a bit lower?
Your Honor, I can't speculate as to what the state legislatures are thinking in this area, but I do think that the federal government has taken the lead in child pornography prosecutions. And if there are no further questions, I would ask the this court to affirm the sentence of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. McGovern. Seeger? How much time? You have 1 minute, Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to answer the court's question about the Nevada parole, Mr. Gross's Nevada parole has actually been revoked. He was on life parole in Nevada, and that parole has been revoked. So he is now facing a sentence of life in Nevada. In addition, I would simply like to respond to the government's point about the inference of gross disproportionality. There is an inference of gross disproportionality here for two reasons. First, as I mentioned earlier, the nature of the harm caused and the fact that this is not a violent crime. But secondly, Your Honors, and this is very important, a 15-year penalty is grossly disproportionate considering Mr. Gross's culpability. And this is something that the Supreme Court always considers. to determine Mr. Gross's culpability for this recidivist offense, we have to look at the underlying crime and the circumstances that led up to this prior conviction, which triggers this recidivist sentence here. Your Honors, the Supreme Court has said that those prior convictions cannot be considered in the abstract. So in Solem, the Court explicitly considered the defendant's prior alcohol addiction as in interpreting his culpability. Here, this punishment is grossly disproportionate, considering the sexual abuse that Mr. Gross suffered at the hands of four different uncles. Mm. I would ask for all of these reasons that the Court find this to be a grossly disproportionate punishment in violation of the Eighth Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.